I'm really thrilled and honored to have a couple of minutes to start this out, and then I'll get off the stage, I promise. So, a few remarks. Researchers have been busy improving or correcting baseball's historical record for more than a century, and we are still doing so, in fact. Of all the many milestones in this long story, two of the most important bring us here today. The first was the August 1969 publication of the Baseball Encyclopedia, all 2,338 pages, a revolutionary step forward from what had come before. This year marks the 50th anniversary of this classic work, and we are joined here today by David Neft, who spearheaded the massive project that led to the book. The second milestone was the formation of Sabre almost exactly 2 years later. Surely Sabre would not have gotten started as early as it did without the interest that had been stirred up by what came to be known as the Big Mac. Several members of David's team were early Sabre members, and two early committees, Biographical Research and Records, could be said to be direct continuations of his work. Our other panelists have built on this and have become research giants in their own right. John Thorne, at the end, he's our moderator, he's baseball's official historian, and his footprints are all over this world. In 1989, he and Pete Palmer...
Wow.
Seems scary.
In 1989, he and Pete Palmer published Total Baseball, and throughout its eight editions, it became the most comprehensive and trusted baseball reference work. John. David Smith is the founder and longtime president of RetroSheet, a group of volunteers who have, among other things, digitized the play-by-play for over 174,000 games. Don't fret, they're not done. This is 98% of the games over the last century. And in 2000, Sean Foreman, soccer fan, went live with baseballreference.com, which has since become the premier source for baseball records and statistics ever since. With that, I leave you in John's capable hands.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks to all of you, because we, like the three of us on the panel besides David, you are descendants of the Baseball Encyclopedia. And I think as you could not have done what you have done over these past 49 years without the work of the people on this panel, we could not have done it without you. All of us on this stage stand in our past and continuing work on the shoulders of the Baseball Encyclopedia and its principal architect, David Neft, at my immediate right, whose indispensable work we honor today. From the publication of this work 50 years ago, we may date the dawn of Sabre, as Mark noted, sabermetrics, and I submit the rise of a nerd culture which has permitted us to fly our freak flags high. There was a time, and we can all recall it, when nerd was a term of opprobrium. Now, not so much. While each of the folks up here today have notable accomplishments to their credit besides an exhaustive presentation of baseball statistics, we'll confine ourselves today to the encyclopedic realm. No talk of PhDs, though all here except me have one. No talk of day jobs, though none of us imagined when we first ventured onto this great green field that our work in baseball would come to define us. How will we go about this? In the same way that we have run panels for Sabre in the past decade, with an opening question for all three panelists, then one for each of you, beginning with David Neft. Each of you is encouraged to weigh in on a question that may have been posed to another. For the audience, we will welcome questions from you at the end of the program. I ask that you scribble them to a card when prompted, and we will review them, bowdlerize them, and try to respond. For all, starting with David Neft, it's obvious that your work has achieved its full expression with the advances in computing power over the past half century. But tell me about the human element in your works. Who might you wish to recall particularly? Tell us about old-timers who are perhaps forgotten names even to this audience. John Tattersall, Lee Allen, Dick Cohen, John Hagrojan, Steve Hurt. David?
Sure. Interesting group of people you've chosen. Lee Allen is a wonderful, wonderful human being. Everybody who came to know him wound up really loving the man. He was essential to the project. He had a group of people around the country who sent him demographic information about ex-ball players, and he compiled all of this information into two loose-leaf books. And that was the base of the biographical information about the players in the Baseball Encyclopedia. Also, as John indicated, was the forerunner, obviously, for the Sabre Biographical Research Committee, which continues that wonderful work to this day. The great tragedy of the Baseball Encyclopedia Project was that Lee died 2 months before the book was published. And it was a great blow, particularly to the two people who worked most closely with him, Jordan Deutsch and myself. He would have really loved to see the finished product, but that was not to be. John Tattersall was not really involved in the project day to day. John's relationship to it was that he had spent a lifetime, really, doing research in his free time. He was a vice president of a steamship company. And his principal contribution to the project, which was enormous, was that he had thoroughly researched the National League from 1876 through 1899. And he had scrapbooks with box scores and newspaper stories from the home and visiting team for every game in that period. And he had compiled the stats for every game in that period, which was the basis of what we did. We essentially bought that material from John, who was also a very nice guy, but the opposite of Lee. John was basically an introvert, and Lee was an extrovert. Both very nice people in very different ways. My favorite thing about Dick Cohen, in Ireland, Dick Cohen, when he was in college at Northeastern, was on the track team. And he had the most unusual participation of any track and field athlete that I've ever known of. He participated in two events, marathon and shot put. I'll bet you've never known anyone else who ever did that. And both of those sort of indicate that his stamina and work capacity were absolutely incredible. Talking about John Hagrojan and Steve Hurt illustrates really the nature of the group who was working on the Baseball Encyclopedia. They both had very strong political philosophies at the opposite, totally opposite ends of the spectrum. And it was illustrative of a very diverse group of over 40 people that worked on the book. But everybody was united by the project and by the desire to do it right, get it complete, do the best job we possibly could. Steve was a 17-year-old freshman at Fordham when he joined us as a part-time researcher. As many of you, I'm sure, know, wound up being the chief operating officer for the Vias Sports Bureau. I'm still friends with both Steve and John. John went on after the encyclopedia. He had finished college before the book. Went on to get a master's in sociology, and then went to law school. And lived in Brooklyn, and 2 years ago retired as a legal aid criminal defense attorney for indigent defendants in Brooklyn, New York. Still a wonderful guy. Great sense of humor. So, interesting group of people, and that's just a few of them.
Thanks, David. And now for Dave Smith. Could you tell us a little bit about how RetroSheet, you know, I know this is a novel, it's a Russian novel, how RetroSheet started, and some of the people who were instrumental at the outset, even if they no longer are part of the picture?
That's a great question. I want to add a little bit to your question to David about personal. I'll speak from the personal point of view as a consumer. Since I got this, here it is. Apparently no one else brought one except me, which is just kind of amazing. And I got this as a Christmas present in 1969. I just finished my first semester of graduate school. And it says, Christmas 1969, to David, this should answer some questions you haven't even thought of, mother and daddy. Which was perfect. The personal connection to this all over the place is really great. Now, I'm sure a lot of people have seen this. I don't know if you've ever seen this little handy calculator that you can look up individual players and find out where they rank. And stuff. That came with
it. I have never seen that.
Ha. One of the things that, although I didn't know all the people that David has mentioned, I know a lot of them now, but I sure didn't then, is it was very clear that this was not an individual effort. I mean, you have to have a leader, but there's lots of individuals that are contributing to this. And that's certainly true for RetroSheet, that I get more of the attention than I deserve because somebody has to be the one to sit up front and get talked to. But this isn't me. There's a whole lot of other people, some of whom are no longer with us, Clem Comley and David Vincent, in fact. But there's so many people that contributed so much of their time that you ask somebody, can you please go look up 5 games in the newspaper, and you get the results for 50. I mean, people are just so anxious to do this. And I would put out this is long before internet, long before email. So I spent a lot of money on postage, sending out letters to lots and lots of people, and get incredible responses to everything. Yes, can I help? What can I do? Where can I go and look things up? So the personal connection, of which this was the beginning, just carries through everything that I've ever done.
Sean, would you like to tell us a little bit about how the impulse to develop baseballreference.com came to you, and who was involved besides yourself?
So I think I started Baseball Reference before I attended my first Sabre convention, but it was shortly after that, and I just remember, Pete Palmer, for instance, goes all through all the work that we do at Sports Reference, not only baseball, but football and basketball as well, and his colleague, Gary Gillette, who we worked very closely with. I was inspired by Bill James to do a lot of what we did on the site. And also at Sabre, just people who were very supportive and I found very inspirational just because their depth of knowledge, people like Lyle Spatz and Bill Carl with the Records Committee and the Biographical Committee were always, very, very, very friendly to me. And then, from a personal standpoint, when I started the site, I was working for a gentleman, Don Malcolm, who had a competitor. It was kind of it followed the Bill James baseball abstract, thank you. And so it was not doing great. And I remember Baseball Prospectus, what came out around that time and was just kind of kicking our butt. So I was feeling very competitive with them. And so they kind of inspired me onto greater things. And I've since become friends with many of the people at that book, but also, you know, on a personal level, Jim Furtado, who's a friend of mine, who I talked a lot and bounced a lot of ideas off of, and Greg Spira, who many of you know, I think as well, were other people that were invaluable as I was creating kind of the basics of the site.
Now I'm going to offer questions to individuals, but co-panelists may kick in, and a food fight may ensue. And I brought a tarp just in case. For David Neft, tell me about the landscape of baseball reference works as you saw it when young. Did you own the Turk and Thompson Baseball Encyclopedia? And for the benefit of our audience, please, if you did, tell them what the hell it was. And did you know about Ernie Lanigan or Henry Chadwick?
Okay. Yes, I own the Turk and Thompson Baseball Encyclopedia, which was published by A.S. Barnes and Company either 1951 or 52. 51? Okay. Originally. For its point in time, it was a wonderful book. It was from that book that I first started learning about 19th century baseball and becoming interested in it. It had every player, had pretty good biographical information about every player, but had very limited statistical information. Basically had year played, team played for, positions played, batting average for batters, won and lost record for pitchers.
Games played, perhaps.
Games played. I was aware of Henry Chadwick at that time. I was not aware of Lanigan's encyclopedia until I met Lee Allen. Lee Allen introduced me to Ernie Lanigan's 1922,
right. I believe. With annual updates running for 10 years or so, yeah.
I want to add to that in addition to Turkin and Thompson and Lanigan Baseball Encyclopedia in 1922, the first, I think, comprehensive baseball encyclopedia I know of is Baldom by George Moreland in 1914, which I'm happy to say I own a copy. It's really remarkable. But what's really special that I want to give David a real compliment for in this book is not only has, as you all know, all the details of great biographical stuff, it has all this demographic stuff, the distribution by state, where people were born, all the stuff that goes just beyond the playing of the game. And what David did that is so much better, so much of a conceptual leap from what was there before, is he didn't just expand on those. He looked at things completely differently. That I always had the sense that the earlier ones, Turkin and Thompson, would just sort of add things on from year to year. You get the new baseball guide and you put in the new numbers. They went back to the beginning and started from scratch. And they went back and dug up their stuff on their own. And I would say that when I finally started RetroSheet many years after that, That was certainly a model to me. Now, I knew from the beginning that as great as it was to read the newspaper stories and get some sense, having the real play-by-play of the game would be the ultimate. That's where it all happened, and that's why I started this in the first place. But it was very clear to me that going back to the very basic raw data was the way to do it, and this was very much an inspiration for that.
Dave Smith, this one's for you. By the time you began to contemplate RetroSheet, what was the status and standing of other attempts to present baseball records? And
I just said that a little bit.
The Baseball Encyclopedia had become entrenched, and right. Project Score Sheet had arisen, and without Project Score Sheet, there is not RetroSheet.
No, I wouldn't say that. Project Score Sheet, I owe Bill James an enormous debt of showing through Project Score Sheet that it was possible to get people from all over the country who'd never seen each other to work together for the goal of collecting play-by-play data. I will absolutely always thank him for that. He showed that it was possible. And it was frankly inspirational for me to do that. But he was, as I understand it, I don't want to speak for him since he's not here, he was interested in going forward, present to forward. And I said, that's nice, and I want to go backwards. That's why we're retro sheet. Yeah, we count, you see our recent release, we're back to 1935. We do things backwards completely. And it was clear to me that it was two things. Not only the complete historical record, I got two things there, the complete historical record, but also a way to get to modern analysis. Bill had developed great sabermetric things, even though he wasn't calling them that yet, that depended on play-by-player data, runners advanced, I mean, situational data of how people do. And you have to have play-by-play data to do that. So that was an incredible thing to show that that was possible to do. And the connection of when I was starting RetroSheet in the late 80s is that you needed computing power. You can have an awful lot of really energetic people, but you're not going to sit there and do 174,000 games by hand. It just isn't going to happen. So I always say that the personal computer did not make RetroSheet easier. It made it possible. And this was sort of the inspiration for that. So the incentive for people to come together and collect all this information was just fantastic. And certainly I owe Bill a lot for that. But he really had nothing to do with RetroSheet itself. The Project Score Sheet was a thing that ended, and you know, and we did
stuff. So crowdsourcing, which is a common term these days, is something you pioneered.
Well, except that crowdsourcing implies money, and we don't do money. We are completely nonprofit, and as Sherry Nichols, our first vice president, said, RetroSheet is not nonprofit, we're anti-profit. And I will say, this sounds harsh, but it's my honest opinion. One of Project Scoresheet's problems, what led to its demise, was fights over money. And the very first decision that we made in RetroSheet was that no one involved in the project would ever make a dime out of this. And that anyone who volunteered would know, A, I'm not making money out of this, and B, anything you do for us will be given away to everyone for free. And if you don't like that, and you don't have to like that, then there's the door. You don't have to stay. But if you stay, everything you give me will be given to everybody for free. And it was so clear. So that's a Project Scoresheet inspiration in kind of a negative way. Because I was in Project Scoresheet, too, and up close and on the board of directors and saw what I thought were the problems. I didn't repeat those mistakes. I've made other mistakes.
Was the scoring system the same between the two?
Happily, well, Project Scoresheet had three different scoring systems. The last one of those was created by David Nichols and Tom Tippett, who became very closely part of RetroSheet. So yes, it is the same scoring system ultimately.
Sean, this is for you. By the time you entered the field, Total Baseball was ascendant and had gone digital, although I will confess weekly. Tell me about that landscape as you viewed it and the opportunities that seemed to present to you.
So, I'm slightly younger than the baseball encyclopedia is, and so I grew up, there were always encyclopedias. It wasn't a novel concept for me. I was in graduate school at the time, there's a very famous story about Bill Gates being in junior high and getting access to computers, and he and all of his classmates, you know, all of the people who started Microsoft were about the same age. And there were three of us who started Sports Reference who were about the same age. We were all in graduate school because we had access to high-speed internet. And so I got interested in web design, and I thought, you know, this book's really helpful, but it would be a lot better if I could, say, look at the Yankees and then immediately click to Joe DiMaggio's page and see what Joe DiMaggio's stats were. And so I wouldn't have to, you know, leaf through 800 pages of text to get to where I wanted to go. And so Total Baseball had a CD-ROM. I don't think I'm, this is, we're not going to get sued by you at this point.
Not news. Right,
John?
Not news.
So Sean Lahman.
Well, you may get sued by me.
Sean, there was a CD-ROM in the back of Total Baseball, which was not very well protected, and Sean Lahman was able to create a database out of this CD-ROM. The Baseball Archive, baseball1.com, which many of you probably are familiar with. And I think that came out sometime in 99, maybe, and I, you know, saw that and thought, well, now we have the stats, because I probably wasn't going to be able to type in everything that was in Total Baseball in order to create the site. I wonder if I could create a site out of this. And so I was a graduate student, didn't have much money. I knew I think $20 a month, I could get 200 megabytes of server space on a server in Florida, which was about my budget. And so I created a model page out of one player, multiplied, you know, saw how big that page was. I think it was, you know, 5 kilobytes, 10 kilobytes, something like that. Multiplied that by 15,000, said, well, these would fit within 200 megabytes of space. And so instead of doing my doctoral thesis, I created Baseball Reference instead. And so I did eventually finish the thesis, but anyway, it was, you know, it was there was a TotalBaseball.com website. ESPN had stats, but there wasn't really there wasn't an easy to use. So I think I came at the problem less as a baseball research problem and more as a data presentation problem, and so that's a little bit more my orientation in terms of how I present this information and why I present this information.
I'd like to interject on the Total Baseball CD-ROM deconstruction. What it revealed to me after my outrage of 10 minutes was that while a database may be copyrightable, the data is not. There, you cannot copyright a fact. For me to say that Denny McLain won 31 games in 1968 does not make that fact mine. So Sean and I and the two Davids and all of you in Sabre were all on the same page. What you get to protect is the volume of your work, the structure of your work, the concept of your work perhaps, but not the individual data. And we are in the sharing business, all of us. David Neft, how did you come to be a principal in Information Concepts Incorporated, which we refer to loosely as ICI? Tell us a little bit about what that might be. To head the Encyclopedia Project, and to convince a major publisher that a baseball book of some 2,300 pages was a great idea. I note that the retail price of the Macmillan or Baseball or ICI Encyclopedia at $25 was in 1969, today's $174.
Big expensive book. Sure. In 1964, I worked for company called Lewis Harris and Associates. Lou Harris, the pollster, and was working on, basically on elections, as a presidential election year, for CBS. The number two person in that company is a guy named Paul Funkhauser, who had come from IBM. And in early 1965, when Lou Harris decided he wasn't going to do certain things with the company that we thought he was going to do, Paul resigned and formed his own company called Information Concepts Incorporated, and invited two of the Harris people, Bill Headline and myself, to join him as principals in the company, as well as three other people who were not part of Harris. And ICI was started to do interesting, unique, computer-based projects, basically, in those still pretty early days of computers. And we did some work, early work for IBM, one part of which involves sports information. That's what got me to meet Lee Allen, to see everything that was in the Hall of Fame. And that's just on the information side. The thing that really led to the project, Baseball Encyclopedia Project happening, was technology. One of the most important facts about this book is that it was the first book of any kind published in the United States to be typeset electronically. And again, picking off on what Sean said and Dave said about what they did, imagine 2,300 pages of six-point type having to set the linotype equipment and having to proofread every word and every number. Physically and economically impossible. So the breakthrough came, and it came from an interesting source. It came from Triangle Publications, the Annenberg family company in the Philadelphia area that interestingly had originally made most of its money from sports information publishing because they owned the Daily Racing Form. In 1948, a gentleman who I believe his name was Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, created a new publication called TV Guide. And in 1953, Triangle Publications bought TV Guide from the founder. And it became very, very successful. And by the mid-1960s, it was so successful that they had something like 150 local editions of TV Guide. And predictably, they found that setting type every week for 150 editions was becoming a very, very big problem. So they got IBM interested, and IBM started creating software to electronically set type. And three of us from ICI were invited to Radnor, Pennsylvania, the TV Guide, when they were putting the new system in, to see it demonstrated and hear how it worked. And, you know, it was the I'm not a computer expert, but the brilliant thing that IBM did was they didn't try to build one massive piece of software. There were three separate pieces of software. There was a database program, formatting program, and an interface program to take the data from the database to the formatting program. And when they described the database program, you know, they said they gave every TV program a unique numerical ID number, and every bit of information about that program went into a file headed by that number. Well, I didn't have to be particularly intelligent to see that you could do the same thing
for baseball
and give every baseball player a unique number. And when I got home from Radnor, the next day I started working on a proposal to do the baseball site. Now, the question about getting a publisher interested. First of all, when I got the publisher interested, we didn't know exactly how big the book was going to be.
That is what Adam said to Eve.
Yes.
You got it. You got it. In fact, when we took my original dream of what I wanted to do, it was much bigger than this. What had to come out to produce this book was fielding statistics. Because it just... no space. But getting them interested was not that difficult. The people there, Bob Markell, the editor, and Jeremiah Kaplan, the president of Macmillan, saw the possibility. The other thing that happened, which was vital and really, really important in all of this, was the support from Major League Baseball, which at the time meant basically the American League and the National League. There was very little going on in what we now call MLB in the 1960s. The support was amazing, just absolutely amazing. They were so keen on having this book published and having all the information in it. They had no financial interest in the project.
No licensing fee?
No, nothing. And I guess the best way to describe it is when it was published, I was expecting, and it certainly happened, that there was going to be a launch party, a lunch at some restaurant where the media were invited. And there were like two levels of launch parties in the publishing industry at that time. The B level is at the right moment during the lunch.
Carnegie Street Deli is B level.
The editor of the book would hold up the book so reporters could take pictures and so on, and tout the book and its virtues. A level was, it wasn't the editor of the company who stood up there with the book, it was the president of the company. So that's what I was expecting, that Jeremiah Kaplan, the president of Macmillan, would do the honors. This is what happened. The person who stood up, got the picture taken, and touted the book was the baseball commissioner.
Wow. Newly installed.
Newly installed, Bowie Kuhn. And I don't know of a single instance where that has happened since.
I can tell you that we had this experience for Total Hockey with Gary Bettman, but that's a different sport.
Right.
Can I add to that? The copy of the book I got is a letter on the letterhead of the Baseball Office of the Commissioner. Dear baseball fan, you now have in your possession what I believe to be baseball's finest and most complete record book, signed Bowie Kuhn. That came with the book. So
it was just unbelievable. I got time for one story?
Go ahead.
I'm going to mention a name. Raise your hand if you recognize the name. Rudy Schaefer.
Oh, yeah.
Rudy Schaefer was, to me, a Major League Baseball front office legend. He was Bill Veeck's guy for many years. And at the time we were doing the book, he was the PR director of the Chicago White Sox, which, Rudy being Rudy, meant that he was also what we would today call the VP marketing. His title didn't exist then. We had this committee pass on the official records. And on the committee was Dave Grody, the PR director of the National League, Bob Holbrook, PR director of the American League. And they told me that they had told all of the club PR directors, sent out notice to them, what was going on, and to cooperate with us if we called with any questions that they could help with on past data. So the time came, I had an issue with something with the White Sox, and I pick up the phone, and I call Rudy Schaefer. And this being the mid-1960s, before modern technology, secretary answers the phone, and I ask to speak to Mr. Schaefer, who I had never met. I was this 30-year-old young man working on this book. And she says, I'm sorry, but Mr. Schaefer's in a meeting. You give me your name and phone number, I will have him call you back. I said, fine. Say, my name is David Neft. Before I could say anything else, she says, oh, Dr. Neft, if you hold on for just a couple of minutes, I am going to go into the meeting and get Mr. Schaefer. I'm sure he'll want to come out of the meeting to talk to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow is right. But that is what was going on.
So I only knew you after you were important. David Smith, this is for you. ICI had sent legions of researchers in pursuit of box scores and with the scrapbooks of Tattersall and newly created score sheets for years of MLB play for which official records did not exist. They had scoured the territory. But were the records and their underlying box scores correct? Tell us about your itch to think that play-by-play might be what was required.
The comparison I always make, that I think it inspired other people, but certainly inspired me, is that collecting a play-by-play account for a game is like collecting baseball cards. When I was 10 years old and going to the grocery store and buying the baseball, you don't buy the whole set. You get a pack of five at a time, and you trade with other people. The excitement of, I didn't really care who I was getting. It was nice to get Rocky Colavito, but Gene Baker was good to have too. You know, having the complete set. And that's exactly the way I think RetroSheet is, that it's not like counting the grains of sand on the beach. That would be impossible. This is a big number, but it's not an infinite number. And so what I found is that there were many different kinds of sources. I started by going to all the teams. And one by one, I contacted the teams. Some were a little easier to deal with than others. Some were a little more polite than others. It took 10 years, and I finally got every team to agree to give me everything they had out of their archives. I had drove a lot of places and copied a lot of stuff. And along the way, I found out, for example, that the Texas Rangers had the Washington Senator records back to 1945. The Atlanta Braves have nothing before 1975. Nothing. When they moved from Milwaukee, they threw everything out. When the Browns moved from Baltimore, they threw everything out. In 1968, Fenway Park was renovated. They threw everything out. So we had all these voids of stuff that I know had existed at one time, and we had to recreate it. So I got all of those. But at the same time, you contact fans. You get fan scorecards. Now, scorecards from kept by three different people at the game aren't always going to agree, and we've got to try to rationalize those. And the further we go back, especially before World War II, it turns out there's a lot of stuff in the newspaper. Now, if you've ever done any old research, you know this is true, that there was no radio. The games were all, or not much, the games were all in the afternoon, and red blue-collar worker coming home from work at 6 o'clock would drop his 2 cents on the newsstand and pick up that day's paper that had the full play-by-play of the day's game in that city. Cleveland Plain Dealer was superb at this. Detroit Free Press was fairly good. St. Louis Post-Dispatch was okay. Some cities were terrible with this. So we've got about 40,000 games that we collected that way. And then finally, the wonderful people at the Baseball Hall of Fame Library, Jim Gates and his staff, fantastic people, they have a lot of score books, these books that are about that big that would fit in an overcoat pocket that sports writers and announcers had kept. And when many of these people died, their families donated the books to the Hall of Fame. And I've made 7 trips to Cooperstown in the last 20 years, and I photographed every page. So I've got about 35,000 games that I photographed one page at a time. And the great thing is there's a whole bunch kept by the same person, so you don't have to learn 10 new scoring systems every time. And the best one of all, which I told our RetroSheet meeting this morning, is Tom Swope, who wrote for the Cincinnati Inquirer from 1918 to 1964, I think. He had all his books are in Cooperstown, and they're immaculate. They're just absolutely superb. When the major revision of the baseball rules happened between 49 and 50, Swope was the head of the committee that did the rewriting, and he was official scorer forever and ever. So we got all of those. We put all this together, the team, fans, newspapers, sports writers' accounts, we're finally able to put all these things together. And then what we're left with at the end is games that we don't have any play-by-play source for. And then when you go back through the newspaper accounts and you try to piece together what you can from newspaper stories to get as good a newspaper, a play-by-play account, I call these deduced games, and the word I use for them is they're plausible. Mm-hmm. They're not perfect, but they're plausible. They match the official statistics, which is the best we can do with it.
I think of the encyclopedia as being like Mount Rushmore. I think of you guys as being like Crazy Horse Monument. I mean, just the scope is like 10 times greater, but you might actually finish. I mean, it's kind of the idea.
That's an interesting compliment.
Sean, for you, like both Davids, and it occurs to me now, Bob Davids too, you began a new, dauntingly improbable venture. One of your great contributions, it seems, is to not only provide the best raw data with the help of RetroSheet and others, but also to provide the newer, most commonly accepted analytical measures of player performance. Tell me about your thoughts on including that, or including and excluding.
As I said earlier, I think I come at it from a point of view of organizing the information and presenting in a way that not that I try to present it as useful as possible to the user, and so we're not doing as much primary research, nearly as much primary research, and so I always ask myself, is what questions are the users trying to answer, and so you know, whenever we thought about, I thought about what we might put on the page or how we might structure something or how we would link from A to B, I always tried to put myself in the user's perspective as to, you know, what question am I trying to answer? And obviously the question of who's the best player in the league is a big question that people want to answer. What's the context of this player? And so, you know, very early on, I can't remember if we launched with it or not, we had similarity scores that were a Bill James creation. I think we had maybe had runs created as well. But, you know, being on the web and being built by a computer, we could do a lot of extra stuff. So we'd take something that was used in one setting and do a spin on it. So, you know, you can look at similarity scores for the entire career, but you could also look at it through age 25, so which I thought was a more relevant way to look at an active player than just, you know, saying Jeff Bagwell at age 25 was the same as, you know, some journeyman first baseman from the 50s. That's not useful. Saying he's had a similar career to, to probably someone like Jimmy Fox or somebody like that is a much more relevant comparison to be made. And so we've always tried to, you know, use the stats. I wouldn't say we're bleeding edge. You know, Baseball Prospectus, FanGraphs, Hardball Times, they do tremendous work, and I have a lot of respect for those people because they're much more on the cutting edge of what's available in terms of sabermetrics. You know, we've always tried to stay a little bit behind that and really put out the numbers that we think are going to be most useful for people answering the questions that they have.
Last question for an individual is for David, appropriately, David Neft. Tell us about the pride you felt when your uncovering of records, computing retroactive RBIs or retroactive ERAs, by retroactive I mean RBIs were not an official stat till 1920, ERA was not an official stat until 1912. How did your retroactive computations unveil new stars, some of whom went on to plaques in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Sure. In the immediate aftermath of the publication of the Baseball Encyclopedia, the thing that gave me the greatest personal joy was that Sam Thompson and Addie Joss became Hall of Famers. And the reason is Sam Thompson, who was an RBI machine, albeit, of course, he had Delahanty and Hamilton batting in front of him, but still amazing RBI stats. And Addie Joss, turned out, had a lifetime ERA that was second all time in the history of baseball at that time. And there's no doubt in my mind that the additional information about these two individuals got them into the Hall of Fame. But in a broader sense, that's what this book was about, being able to shed new light to not only Hall of Fame committee members, but everybody in the public who could buy copy of this book and have access to a copy of this book, buying it or being in the library, reading it, that it just got so many more people interested in so many more facets of the game of baseball. And that's what my colleagues here have continued to do in the 50 years after this book.
Yeah, well, Bobby Gritch, this is not highlighted by you, this was highlighted by newer stats. I would like to point out that Sam Thompson's grandnephew is in the audience today, and would you be so kind enough as to stand and state your name?
All right.
Don's great contribution to my daily enjoyment is his sending me a Sam Thompson bobblehead a couple of years ago. We have received one lone question. I can imagine that if we welcomed verbal questions, we might get a great many more. This one seems to be directed toward David Neft in particular, but anyone is welcome to reply or BS on any subject of his liking. Question. The first baseball encyclopedia I recall as a kid was the very basic one created by Frank Menke. Was he at all an inspiration for your subsequent efforts?
No.
Whoops.
Frank Menke was a formidable sports writer who, in the Bill Stern school, liked to make up stuff.
Well, if we get to BS about anything, there's one thing I forgot before. One of the great values of this book, this physical particular item to me, is I've taken it with me to lots of regional Saber meetings where there's major league players. And I have about 50 major league players. I had them sign their page in the book, including Monty Irvin's. I even have a Hall of Famer in there. And they're all just delighted to see their name on the page like that. That was really a very special thing to be able to do that.
Folks, I think we have reached our conclusion. I would like to repeat what I said at the very introduction, which is that the fruits of our labor is you.
Yep.
Keep it up.
Amen.
David, what a pleasure.